The headlines: Denmark is holding a referendum that could boost militarization in the European Union. China conducts a combat readiness patrol around Taiwan as the island state announces plans for military cooperation with the U.S. National Guard. And also ahead, a Palestinian woman becomes the latest victim of Israeli gunfire in the West Bank. Hello and welcome, everybody, here in the Iranian capital, Tehran. This is World News. This is our top story for this half hour. In Denmark, people are voting in a referendum on whether to scrap their country's decades-old policy of not joining the European Union's common defense policy. Denmark is the only EU member that has a so-called defense reservation and is not bound by the bloc's common security and defense policy. However, recent polls suggest that Danes will vote in favor of abolishing the existing norm. The referendum comes as more European countries have been seeking closer military ties and increasing their defense spending since the beginning of the Russia-Ukraine war. In the latest example, Sweden and Finland have applied for NATO membership, whereas Germany has decided to release more than $100 billion to modernize its army. Russia widening its gas cuts to Europe. Denmark is the latest to see a halt in gas supplies in response to its refusal to pay for gas in rubles. The Danish energy company says it has been informed by Russia's energy giant Gazprom about its decision. That's the day after Gazprom turned off its supplies to the top Dutch trader. Denmark says, however, that it has stored enough gas and could buy more from the European market. Russia has already stopped supplies to Bulgaria, Poland, and Finland, citing their failure to make payments in rubles. Moscow's measure comes in response to a host of sanctions the European Union has imposed on Russia over its war in Ukraine. On Monday, the bloc has also agreed to ban Russia's seaborne oil imports and slash Russia's largest bank from the SWIFT system. The new sanctions sent Brent crude prices soaring to $122 a barrel. Former U.S. Army Psychological Warfare Officer Scott Bennett says that Europe will suffer more from the economic war it has launched against Russia. Take a listen.
Well, it comes down to substance. Russia has material. It has trees. It has oil. It has gas. It has gold. It has food. It has fertilizer. It has the substance of life. Europe has nothing but credit systems and banking systems, and really credit doesn't matter when you have a war situation. The only thing that matters is material substance. So Europe is basing all of its policy on the hot air and the fantasy that it is, it is essential. It is some sort of social hub that unites all of civilization, and it is not. Russia is faring far better than any other country. The ruble is at record highs. Half the world agrees with Russia. Only European countries do not. And that's really based on a vanity and a silly, soft, pacifist culture that has grown in Europe like a cancer because of the nanny state that the United States has imposed upon it. But if these countries are trying to wean themselves off of Russian oil and gas, perhaps the best thing for Russia to do is to wean them off quickly by yanking the spigot out of their, out of their economies and letting them get to that place all the more faster. They really want to wean themselves off. Russia has no problem cutting them off tomorrow from every barrel of oil and every container of gas and sell it to China, sell it to India, sell it to South America, sell it to South Africa, sell it to other nations.
The U.S. president has confirmed that Washington will send more advanced rocket systems to Ukraine to strike what he said were key targets of Russian forces inside Ukraine. Joe Biden underlined in an op-ed article in the New York Times that the White House was neither encouraging nor enabling Ukraine to strike beyond its borders. He said the U.S. was not seeking a war between NATO and Russia. He also noted that the United States was not trying to bring about the ouster of the Russian President Vladimir Putin. He made it clear that Washington will not directly get engaged in the Russia-Ukraine conflict as long as the U.S. or its allies were not attacked. And while NATO continues to supply Ukraine with heavy weapons, our correspondent in Donetsk reports that some of those weapons may be used to target and kill civilians.
An air raid siren over the separatist-held Donetsk. The Ukrainian army shells this city every day. School 22, an old building. It survived World War II, but not this conflict.
Earlier today, it was reported that two people were killed here, but that's been updated now. Three killed and five injured. And that's just one of the strikes that have happened here in Donetsk today.
My daughter studied here. Luckily, children are studying from home. The teachers were wounded. It's horrible. I don't know where my child is going to study. There's nothing you can comment upon. It's beyond human understanding. They are simply fascists who are trying to eliminate us. That's all. They just want to kill all Donbass people.
Another school nearby also hit. It's clear these institutions have been specifically targeted. There is blood on the pavement.
Yes, we had a horrible day today. We were working when the missile hit. It was big. One person died. Two are injured. One person's in hospital now. It's a very sad situation. For some reason, peaceful civilians are targeted, and they hit schools.
They just do not consider us to be human. They're only civilians here, children, women, and old people. We're separatists for them. We're non-human for them. Let it be in no man's land. That's their attitude.
Now, I've covered the strikes by the Ukrainian military on civilian targets here in Donetsk, quite a few of those strikes. But this one here and the one at the other school are on a completely different scale. The ammunition used is far larger. The potential death toll of strikes like this, far greater.
Workmen have put the shell casings on the back of a lorry. The Donetsk People's Republic say this is a 155mm shell, fired by the American-supplied M777 howitzer. 108 of these weapons were delivered to Ukraine by the US. Some have now reached the front line, meaning Ukraine can now blow up schools at a further distance.
If it's proven that NATO weapons were used, what would you say to NATO countries?
They act in a wrong way. Let them come here and see what they give to Ukraine, which is used against us. Let them come and see. I wish in this moment they were here, so they could feel it themselves.
In a battered geography classroom, there's a map of Great Britain and some flags. Today, the children who attend class here are being taught a different lesson about NATO countries, that their weapons are being used to target and kill civilians. Johnny Miller, Donetsk.
China has conducted a combat readiness sea and air patrol around Taiwan in response to what it calls collusion between the United States and the self-ruled island. In a statement, the Chinese military has criticized the U.S. for supporting Taiwanese forces, warning that such measures would put the island into a dangerous situation. The statement says the Chinese forces will strengthen their readiness to foil actions by those supporting Taiwan's independence. China's maneuver comes a day after the Taiwanese president acknowledged about plans for cooperation with U.S. National Guard. Beijing considers Taiwan as part of its territory, but the U.S. has increased its military and diplomatic ties with Taipei. President Joe Biden also angered China recently after he vowed to defend Taiwan militarily if it is attacked by China. Well, Israeli forces shoot dead a Palestinian woman in the occupied West Bank town of Al-Khani. The Palestinian Health Ministry says Israeli soldiers opened fire at 31-year-old Ghofran Warasna at the entrance of the Al-Arub refugee camp. The Israeli military claims she was carrying a knife and approaching soldiers. The Red Crescent says the regime's forces prevented medics from reaching injured Warasna until after 20 minutes of the shooting. Israel has recently escalated its deadly attacks against Palestinians in the occupied territories. More than 50 Palestinians, including prominent journalist Shirin Abu Akleh, have been killed since the start of this year. A pro-Palestinian professor who was forced out of his job at the University of Bristol after the pro-Israel lobby accused him of being anti-Semitic is vowing to continue advocating for Palestine. This after a new round of opposition emerged online attempting to silence him for speaking out. Amina Taylor sat down with David Miller for a one-on-one after the latest round of talks.
A leading scholarly critic of Israeli aggression against Palestinians is speaking out after renewed attacks surface regarding his anti-Zionism work. The social media firestorm erupted after Dr. David Miller shared snippets of an episode of Palestine Declassified, where he's a co-host and co-producer, where the controversial Chabad-Lugovitz set was profiled. The Community Security Trust led the latest charge against Dr. Miller, saying they needed to provide specialized anti-terror training as a result of the charges of extremism leveled against the group.
As some people will know watching this, the Community Security Trust has for a long time tried to attack me and was involved in me being sacked from the University of Bristol. And my response to them specifically was to say, well, they have in their charitable objectives of their charity that they should be educating people about extremism. So my view is that they should be educating the British public about extremist organisations like this one, regardless of whether they're Jewish or Muslim or Christian. But of course they don't and won't do that.
David Miller and his supporters are well aware that there's a coordinated campaign afoot, one that seeks to undermine and smear his name and reputation at every turn. But for Professor Miller, these attacks simply strengthen his resolve. These fresh attacks are the latest in a long line of smears that led to Professor Miller being removed from his post at the University of Bristol. A tribunal on the issue is slated to be held in 2023.
Those who speak up for Palestinian rights will be attacked by Zionist groups, Zionist lobbies, and it will be said that they are anti-Semitic. This is the weapon of choice which they use. But it's not only in the UK. There are numerous other examples in other countries, in Germany, in Austria, in France, in the US, in other countries too. That case, my case, other cases too, they are a sort of warning to other people. You know, don't do this. Don't speak up. Don't tell the truth as you see it, because this will happen to you. And, of course, that frightens many people. What's at stake is that you're not allowed to speak out about Palestine. And if you do, that they will come for you. And we see that, you've mentioned academics. Yes, it affects academics all across the country, but we also see it with other, in other areas. We see counsellors and popular music stars and a whole range of people being attacked.
Like others who've paid a high price for speaking out, Professor Miller refuses to be cowed and will continue fighting for justice for Palestine. Amina Taylor, London.
Oxfam has urged all parties to the conflict in Yemen to extend the current armistice to help avert catastrophic hunger and prevent the humanitarian crisis from spiraling in the country. The international charity organization says the truce has led to a drop in civilian casualties as airstrikes and ground fighting have significantly reduced. So Oxfam says the opportunity must be seized to extend the truce and push for a lasting peace. The international body sounded the alarm on Tuesday, a day before the UN-brokered ceasefire was expected to run out. A Saudi-led coalition began unleashing a deadly war on Yemen in March 2015. The conflict has killed hundreds of thousands of Yemenis and plunged the country into a harrowing humanitarian crisis. Iran condemns German and French statements over the seizure of two Greek tankers in the Persian Gulf over maritime violations. Iran's foreign ministry spokesman has described the statements as a one-sided and unjustifiable. Saeed Khatibzadeh says Paris and Berlin should stop defending the vessels that violated the maritime norm and instead uphold legal proceedings based on international laws. German and French foreign ministers had separately criticized the seizure of Greek tankers, calling it a violation of international regulations. Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps detained the vessels. On Friday, the incident came just days after Greece confiscated an Iranian-flagged oil tanker and delivered it to the U.S. Iran slammed the move as a violation of international law and called for immediate release of the vessel and its cargo. Meanwhile, Greek environmental groups have condemned Athens for causing an oil spill during the transfer of Iranian oil. Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps seized two Greek oil tankers in the Persian Gulf on Friday, citing maritime violations. Although the incident came right on the heels of Greece's confiscation of Iranian tanker, countries such as France were quick to condemn Iran, whereas they'd remained silent in the face of Greece's naval seizure. But what can explain such double standards?
Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps has released a video of the recent seizure of two Greek oil tankers in the Persian Gulf over maritime violations. The video shows IRGC's heli-borne special forces boarding the Greek ships ahead of their seizure over violations in the waters of the Persian Gulf. Iran's foreign ministry said one of the vessels, the Delta Poseidon, was sailing international waters at the time, adding that the second tanker was near the Iranian coast when seized. The ministry also said 9 Greeks were among the crews of both vessels, but did not give a number of the other sailors on board. Iran's ports and maritime organization said on Saturday that the crews of the 2 Greek oil tankers are not detained but are aboard the vessels and in good health. U.S. State Secretary Antony Blinken labeled the seizure as unjustified, calling for the release of the tankers and their crews. France, too, called it, quote, a serious violation of international law, while making no mention of the seized Iranian tanker. The seizure of an Iranian oil tanker comes as talks for the revival of the 2015 deal remain stalled.
Well, evidently they've calculated that exerting what they call the maximum pressure on Iran is the necessary thing to do in order to obtain the maximum during the negotiations. It is something that it's difficult to evaluate, but evidently is not a friendly move. Is an indication of the fact that for them, Iran still is under sanctions and therefore to be excluded from international trade in energy, in the energy sector.
The U.S. administration claims it wants to see the JCPOA restored, but actions speak louder than words.
And that brings us to an end here on this edition of World News. Do stay tuned, though. Bye.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Yani?
Bazaar.
Gas powers production, and oil greases the gears of the industry. Without gas and oil, most industries probably wouldn't thrive as they are today. The world consumes around 36 billion barrels of oil per year. Oil and gas are major industries in the energy market and play a significant role in the global economy as the world's primary fuel source. Meanwhile, the process and systems involved in producing and distributing oil and gas are highly complex. They require lots of money and state-of-the-art technology.
Hello there. Welcome to another edition of Bazaar. Today, we'll venture through Iran's oil and gas industry. This sector is massive, and its enormity doesn't quite sink in until you visit one of the industry's annual exhibits. So, we visited the country's 26th International Oil, Gas, Refining and Petrochemical Exhibition, dubbed the Iran Oil and Gas Show. We'll explore this sector's development and uncover why it's essential to the national economy. What are we waiting for? Let's get to it. The Oil and Gas Show is one of the largest exhibitions in the global oil industry. It takes place every year and serves as a place for domestic and foreign industry participants to interact. The exhibition is based on the theme of knowledge-based oil, Iranian production, and global exports. It is based on this year's economic goal set by Iran's leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei. The leader has emphasized strengthening the knowledge-based economy by adopting a scientific and technical approach in all fields. The exhibition showcases the latest products made by Iranian knowledge-based firms. It's a platform for expanding business markets and finding potential customers and suppliers, among other things. We caught up with a few participants to see what types of products and services they offered in this sector. This company manages an entire oil field in southern Iran. Moreover, it engineers machines and compressors needed for refining and processing crude oil and gas products.
Petro Iran Development Company, Petco, is one of the subsidiaries of NIOC, and we are acting as an E&P and GC contractor, and we are involved in several upstream and downstream projects, mainly in Iran and even abroad. The 26th Oil and Gas Show was one of the biggest show during the past even 10 years. As I noticed during these 3 days, there were very good participation of foreign companies. And these foreign companies, it was my surprise that they are not seeking for individual work by themselves. They are looking for cooperative work. Joint ventures with Iranian companies, and because we have a very good, capable Iranian manufacturers and contractors, and I have seen lots of agreements that have been signed during these 3 days. There are very big opportunities for investment in Iran because of nowadays situation in the world. There are a very massive request, demand for Iranian oil and Iranian industry. Manufacturers and contractors, and as it was noticed in this fair, more than 8 billion euros of investment agreement was signed, and I think that we have this opportunity to up to 20 billion euros of investment to sign with the Iranian and even foreign countries.
Another pavilion displayed the cutting-edge technology used in downstream and upstream oil industries. This company is also developing various oil fields and supplying electrical power.
Each year, scores of people and industry participants visit and hold pavilions in this exhibit. Such events also provide unique access to leading decision makers in the oil and gas industry. Additionally, it is a place for knowledge exchange and determining current needs and future development vectors. This year, the fair opened with 1,200 Iranian and 44 foreign exhibitors from 11 countries.
Another benefit of the fair is networking and creating new business opportunities throughout the energy sector with prospective business agreements. A significant number of business deals were closed during the three-day oil and gas show. There is a lot of potential for investment in the oil and gas industry. This exhibit provides chances to link investors with potential joint ventures in this field. It's noteworthy that 23 universities and research centers and over 100 knowledge-based companies, startups, and technology parks participated in this event. High-profile representatives of foreign companies from 22 countries were present at the show too. The most notable was the Secretary General of the Gas Exporting Countries Forum, Mohammad Hamal. Other important figures included the Minister of Oil, Javad Oji, Parliament Speaker, Mohammad Bagher Ghalibaf,
and the head of Parliament's Energy Committee, Feridun Hassan Vand. The sprawling fairgrounds were packed with all sorts of equipment and machinery used in the oil and gas industry. These ranged from advanced technology for extraction, processing, storage, transport, safety systems, and control technology. We spoke with a representative of a company specializing in producing composite pipes, which are high in demand in this sector. Iran's oil and gas industry is thriving and has taken giant strides in production. It owes its many successes largely to knowledge-based companies and research institutions that have offered their services in developing this sector. Expanding the gas and oil industry has been at the top of the government's agenda for years. Over time, it has implemented several measures to this end. The government is focusing on knowledge-based firms and research companies as the bedrock of developing the oil and gas sector. The Oil Ministry has outlined several goals to tap into the high capacities of knowledge-based firms to boost production in the oil and gas sector. These goals are optimizing production, overhauling production facilities, and value chain developments. This goes hand in hand with the domestic development of innovative technologies. So, the government is supporting knowledge-based firms and startups and their efforts to manufacture commodities and equipment required in the oil and gas industry. Finding investors, whether domestic or international, is a top priority for the government. Iran is rich with oil and gas reserves and is the fourth largest oil producer among OPEC members. Plus, Iran possesses the third largest oil reserves in the world. So it's not surprising that the government would want to find ways to exploit its potential. The Oil Ministry has inked 50 agreements and memoranda of understanding worth nearly $17 billion in the first 9 months of last year alone. These deals were with petrochemical holdings, banks, and negotiating with reputable international companies. The agreements mainly focus on developing joint oil and gas fields, flare gas collections, and developing value chains. It plans on using knowledge-based companies and domestic manufacturing potentials to this end. The Minister of Oil, Javad Oji, says exhibits like the Oil and Gas Show reflect Iran's capability and authority despite sanctions. Oji also explains that Iran's gas and oil sector is steadily inching forward and is proving the failure of the US sanction policies. The official highlighted that the Oil and Gas Show displays the country's resiliency and its ability to diversify its economy through energy diplomacy. The minister expressed optimism for the future of this industry as there are grounds for returning to the energy trade. Oji says this can happen through gas swap deals, finding new markets for oil and its byproducts, and exporting technical engineering services. All things considered, there is a bright future for Iran's oil market and industry. Plus, it offers numerous lucrative investment opportunities in downstream and upstream sectors. The need for home appliances dates back to the early stages of human existence, when cave dwellers began developing tools to preserve and prepare food. Today, home technology has become more sophisticated to match our fast-paced lifestyles. The level of convenience and comfort of home is also determined by these items, and they have even become a status symbol for some. In a sense, home appliances define modern living, changing the means of dealing with food, clothing, cleaning, and so much more. This week, we're going to dive into the world of home appliance production. We want to see who the major players are in this industry and see how the market is doing. We will also uncover some of the major contributions of the home appliance industry to the country's economy as a whole.
Our journey this time took us to Abbasabad Industrial City on the outskirts of the capital Tehran. There, we visited a company that specializes in the production of home appliances. Emerson was established some 40 years ago and has become a household name in this industry. In the early days of its activity, it started out by making freezers. Over the years, it has expanded its product list and now manufactures refrigerators, cookers, and washing machines, among a long list of other items. This company has expansive production halls, which house its chain production machinery. Each production hall is tasked with a certain process of manufacturing, such as preparing material for assembling. From start to finish, everything happens at the production lines. Having an assembly line in the manufacturing process helps keep production processes regimented. This ensures the uniform production of items. It might be interesting to know that this company uses the latest computer-assisted robotic equipment in its production halls to get the job done. Automating processes help guarantee that each step is performed with uniform standards throughout. The other advantage is it allows quality control checks and implementation of standards to be performed with speed and accuracy. An integral part of this company is its research and development department. It is strategically intertwined with the production space. Products here are randomly pulled and tested at different stages. But that's not all. This advanced department also collaborates with foreign companies in research. Its production lines produce hundreds of home appliances each day. With this in mind, it has also provided hundreds of job opportunities. The company employs expert technical engineers and experienced workers to manage designs and machines. This company has a unique outlook toward the future and is continuously looking for more ways to foster growth opportunities. As part of its future vision, it hopes to expand its reach and gain a larger share in the international market by increasing its product portfolio. Like many in the manufacturing business, the US sanctions have caused some challenges for this company. But this firm was able to turn these challenges into major opportunities for growth.
As you might know, local home appliance brands in this sector also compete with foreign ones. Iranian manufacturers produce the same quality of home appliances as their international competitors, yet many in the country still seem to be drawn to foreign names. It might be interesting to do a little price comparison here.
Iran's culture and traditions play a big role in consumer trends. For example, newlyweds are expected to move into a home fully furnished with brand new items. The budget needed to furnish a home can cost upwards of $30,000 depending on the decision to purchase foreign brands. However, the budget needed to purchase Iranian brands for ordinary items is far less. One would need a budget of around $10,000 to get it done. For example, the cost of an average two-door Iranian brand refrigerator is roughly $350. The same standard double-door refrigerator made by a Korean brand is roughly $2,500 when purchased in Iran. That is, of course, based on the daily exchange rate of 30,000 tumans to the dollar. In 2018, the government banned the import of foreign brands. Nevertheless, these brands were still seen in the domestic market. This was partly due to existing stockpiles of previous imports. The government implemented the initiative, aiming at strengthening domestic production and sales. But this gave rise to a lucrative black market of smuggled home appliances, which is still being regulated. Trafficked goods have been reduced in recent years. However, they still find their way into the domestic market.
Companies like the one we just mentioned are at the helm of this industry. Currently, there are some 80,000 home appliance manufacturing units in the country. Their domestic productions have not only helped satisfy local needs, but also saved the country millions on imports. Officials say the country is now self-sufficient in terms of the production of these items.
Iran's home appliance manufacturers were operating below their potential capacities around 2018. Before the ban on imports, some 85% of foreign brands available in the country were domestically produced under foreign licenses. The necessary infrastructure existed, but there was little domestic demand due to the competition with foreign brands. Based on figures from the Electrical, Metal and Home Appliance Office of the Ministry of Industry, Mining and Trade, the 2018 import ban was effective. Data from the office shows last year Iran produced over 15 million home appliance units. This is 3 million units more than the government's target of last year and double the production figure of 2018. Officials with the Ministry of Industry, Mining and Trade say indigenizing home appliance parts has reduced imports by $500 million. Such an increase in production also means that home appliance exports skyrocketed. Last year, $140 million worth of these items were exported, and the government hopes to push this figure to $200 million this year. Some industry participants argue one way to increase quality and expand Iran's home appliance market is by lifting the ban on imports. They say the industry has grown by leaps and bounds in recent years, adding it is capable of growing stronger through serious local and international competition. Others argue that it's too soon to lift the ban, as more steps need to be taken to strengthen domestic infrastructure for manufacturing home appliances.
Well, it looks like it's time for me to take a little break and pass the action over to my good friend and colleague out there on the field. Take it away.
Water. It's a vital liquid for every life form on planet Earth. We drink it to quench our thirst, but is that the only use? Well, let me tell you that it is not. We can use it in different industries, such as oil and gas, petrochemicals. And today we are here at a company that works in different areas, like the ones that I mentioned. And one of the things that they produce is related to the water industry.
Atiya Pardozan Sharif Company was established 11 years ago. It's active in key industries such as oil and gas and petrochemicals. They have also managed to cooperate with power plants and steel industry companies. This group has sufficient experience and expertise in designing, optimizing, and manufacturing electrolyzers, as well as designing and creating chlorine plants for seawater and saltwater systems. They have provided jobs for 170 individuals directly and some 200 people indirectly. Using the scientific capital of the graduates of top universities and the experience of skilled specialists in the oil and gas industry and water and wastewater process units in the field of design, construction, installation, pre-commissioning and full operation of electrochlorination units in marine catchments, water and wastewater treatment plants, power plants, petrochemicals, and domestic and foreign refineries, this company is very experienced.
Okay, raw material is brought into the company, then they turn them into things such as plates that are assembled in the line. Now, when the assembly is done, what you see is a seawater electrolyzer cell. Where we use it, I will explain it for you a little bit later. After that, all these things are transferred to protective shields. What do they do? Actually, they protect that equipment. After that, they are transferred to another section for packaging and shipping. So let's go and find out more.
Electrochlorination is the electrolysis of saline water inside an electrolyzer by the application of an electric current. The electrolyzer consists of a set of electrodes in which seawater flows. In this process, chlorine gas is produced at the sodium hydroxide cathode. Sodium hydroxide and chlorine gas then react with each other to form sodium hypochlorite solution.
The final part. Everything is ready for shipping. Something very important about this company is that these products are all produced from 0 to 100 in Iran. They transfer water from Persian Gulf, for instance, to provinces with dry climate, and this helps to disinfect water. Until a couple of years ago, Iranian companies had to import these equipment, but now, thanks to this company, they can buy it at a very good price and use it in their companies.
The research and development unit of the company has been using the latest scientific findings of the world and constantly observed latest technology production trends to improve industry's unit's performance. As a result, they have managed to introduce several knowledge-based technologies to the market to solve the problems of industrial units.
Okay, I was talking to an expert in this lab. What do they do here? Well, after research and development and production, they take samples from the final products and test their quality because they do pay attention to details. I guess that's the end of today's report. Thank you.
Many thanks for that awesome adventure. We learned a lot from that. We still have a bit of time left, though, in the program, so let's look at some news and trends in Iran's gas and oil sector. Here we go. Iran's gas distribution network is quite advanced and has a very high capacity for transferring this hydrocarbon. Currently, the country is set to swap gas with its neighbours to the north.
Iranian officials are in talks with Turkmenistan to exchange gas and transmit Turkmenistan's gas through Iran to Armenia. Meanwhile, Iran presently has an electricity swap deal with Armenia. Under this contract, Iran sends gas bought by Armenia to generate electricity that is then exported to Iran when needed. Iran also sends electricity to Armenia via two transmission lines during the country's winter peak use. Iran enjoys the largest high-pressure gas pipeline network after Russia and can play a key role in transferring gas. The Ministry of Oil has already announced its willingness to start swapping oil and gas with countries around the Caspian Sea.
Among the goals of the Ministry of Oil is to raise the quality of oil refineries while increasing the industry's production capacity to 1.5 times over the next 5 years.
Officials with the ministry say development programs are underway to bring the refining capacity of crude oil and gas condensate to nearly 4 million barrels per day. Production figures presently stand at over 2 million barrels per day. However, current productions are still well below the average recorded output before the illegal US sanctions were imposed. The ministry has identified several investors who have signed agreements with the oil ministry. Their capital will be used in generating and developing refining capacities. Last year, Iran managed to export 1 million barrels per day.
Well, that wraps up our program for today. Thank you for tuning in. I have been Samson Seas, captain of the Seven Seas. Sees you in the next Bazaar.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are and wherever you are listening to us.
The keys of life.
I saw Jalaldi talks about the various keys of life and has brought about this book to be a companion for the very famous Mafatil Jiran, where one is a tool or the keys for paradise, and this book, of course, are the keys of life.
The Keys of Life, a program designed to tell you that what Islam gives you will help get you home with joy and faithfulness. So, well, listen to
The Keys of Life.
The world is a very, very big house, many people living in many rooms. We must open all the doors up, we must unlock them all today. Throw all the keys away.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين.
My name is Sheikh Zayed Al Salami.
A few years ago, I started the course of wanting to commentate on a very important book that I believe is something that would be useful for everyone who reads it, and that is the book Mafatih Al Hayat, written by Ayatollah Al-Uzma Al-Sheikh Jawadi Amuli. We've spoken about marriage a few times before, and here when we're talking about relationships with your kin, with your family members, obviously you are going to have to deal with the topic of your spouse. The first part of this discussion is on how you are able to deal with your wife, and the second part is how to deal with your husband. In the previous episode, we covered the topic of your relationship with your spouse, with your wife, emphasizing on the wife side, today the husband side, and how a husband needs to treat his wife and deal with affairs related to his wife. Clearly, there are a lot more that can be discussed. Ayatollah Jawadi Amuli has spoken about this with as much concise brevity as possible, but for those interested, you need to delve into this topic more. It is indeed a very, very important area which we all need to remind ourselves of, whether we are going to get married, whether we are in our early stages of marriage, or whether we've been married for a very long time. We still need to continue to remember the foundations of what brings about a happy relationship, a happy household, under the shadow of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, living with Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, and living with nobleness, and making sure that we are not only fulfilling that level of tranquility that we all want, and harmony that we all want, but also making sure that we set ourselves as good examples for others as well. As for the topic of dealing with your husband, your relationship with a wife's relationship with her husband, seeing that we want to excel, seeing that we want to be the best of people, seeing that our ambitions, our goals are more towards Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala than towards the material, physical gains of this dunya. So the process of thinking that we have is always towards al-akhirah. And we're always remembering that there are going to be difficulties here in this dunya. Al-dunya sijnul mu'min. This dunya is a jail for a believer. So we are going to have problems. We are going to have hardships. The reason why I am saying this is because it's easier for a wife to conform to her husband than for a husband to conform to his wife. And that's the sad reality, unfortunately, because husbands, or men in general, usually are more stubborn, are more adamant about, are more opinionated, want to put their foot down more, see that it's within their manhood and their masculinity that they need to, you know, always be right and things like that.
Ayatollah Jawadi Amuli, the author of the book Mafatih Al Hayat, The Keys of Life. This book, Mafatih, ought to be in two volumes.
یه جلدش هی مفاتیح الجنان است چه فرون دماغ و صاحب داره فرون روزون است.
One volume, the present volume, مفاتیح الجنان, is on the level of the lofty rewards for praying, fasting, etc.
یه جلدش کم داره و اون اینه که فرون درختکاری اینجا کم صاحب داره. دعا هم داره، ثواب هم داره.
But the book lacks its second volume, which ought to be on subjects like the lofty rewards for planting a tree.
امام همونطوری که اینو گفته بودم گفته دی اون امامی که گفته اگر روزه بگیری ثواب داره همون امام گفته که اگر درخت بکاری میگه ثواب داره.
Imam has mentioned both of these subjects. The very Imam who has stressed out the reward for praying has also highlighted the reward for planting a tree.
محیط زیست نگه سالم نگه داره این دو قطعه داره.
There are generous amounts of reward for protecting the environment.
وقتی میخوای کشاورزی کنی یه قدر گندم بگیر رو به قبله بیست این دعا رو بخون. این هم همون امام گفته دیگه.
When growing wheat, take some in your hand and say these prayers. These are what the very Imam has mentioned.
تو نظام اسلامی این جلد دوم جاش خالی.
We lack this second volume in Islamic world.
That's what we need to change. We need to change this kind of approach. We need to understand that it works both sides. Yes, Islam does say that the manager of the house, that affairs, general affairs, the director, you know, the boss, the president, the pilot, the captain is going to be the husband within the perimeters and affairs of what he is specialized in, of what he is good in. And then it's for the wife to assist, to cooperate in the affairs that she is good in as well. And as long as there is never going to be dhulm, there's never going to be any oppression. The husband never oppresses the wife. The wife never oppresses the husband. Everything is going to be good and positive. Once that line is crossed, once there is oppression and there is wronging, you can't use verses from the Quran to support your dhulm or a hadith to support your dhulm. It's never going to justify what it is that you are doing. Ultimately, there will be a day of hisab and kitab, and Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala's hisab is indeed asir. There is going to be severe punishment, especially for al-zalimeen. We need to remember this all the time because Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa alihi, he says, al-mar'atu rayhana wa laysat biqahramana. We need to have riqqa, we need to be soft, we need to be kind, we need to be generous. We always need to be reminded as well that the wife, our wives, your wife is an amana entrusted to you by her family. So we need to remember that as much as possible. Again, the same way as men need to get married and also as early as possible. You know, once you hit that legal age, you need to start planning for marriage. Not planning only financially, but also planning in your maturity, also planning in your religiosity, in your religious understanding of making sure you make the right selection, you choose the right spouse, you learn the talents of building a family and a household, because it indeed is a skill and a talent. Look at the statistics of divorce. You only need to look at the statistics of divorce for you to understand where are people going wrong. In my opinion, the first thing, the first place where people are going wrong is the selection. The selection process is very un-Islamic, far from Islam. The second is that learning of the skill of how you are able to be a good wife, how you are able to be a good husband. والحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على أشرف خلق الله محمد وآله الطاهرين.
Driving past, walking fast to the field of dreams. Hear the children scream.
There was the Keys of Life by Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran, IRIB English Radio.
Every corner represents a different image in my mind. A momentary emotion, space spent in time, in time. Memories fade like a dusty window pane, and you can't see your past no more. The only thing that remains is that feeling of warmth in your heart that will always be there, be there.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.